Folks, look, I'll tell you what, we got Josh right here. Josh, welcome to the podcast. How you doing?
Doing good. Thanks, Carrie.
Josh, pronounce your last name so I get it 100% right.
Tickle.
That's what I thought. Josh, I loved our chat the other day. It was real, it was raw, it was good. But basically, if I had to give the takeaway, I'd say you believe entrepreneurs need to do less talking and more doing. You've had a ton of success. Tell us some of your success principles.
I think being an entrepreneur is more about what you do with an idea than having an idea. A lot of people have ideas. A lot of people have a lot of good ideas and just don't, have the gumption to go do something about it. So, that was a very broad question, Carrie, but I would say, if we're in general, I think aligning interests with your team, and with as many parties as possible is good.
Yeah.
So make it a win-win across the board. Don't make there be kind of a way where one party can win and the other party doesn't.
Wow.
If we're talking about just like if you're asking such a broad question, I would say that principle has probably been the most valuable that I've utilized in my career so far.
And let's talk a little bit about your history because I think that's going to bring listeners in big time. There's a lot of entrepreneurs, there's a lot of people who talk a big game, but I heard about you in a good way, because people were saying, hey, this is a guy who really has done it, and not only once with several different enterprises. So give people, if you're not afraid to say what year you graduated, give people like a little timeline so we can hear more about your journey.
Yeah, sure. So graduated from Cedarville in 2007 with an engineering degree. I knew during school that I didn't want to really use that degree only. And so very quickly after a couple of stints kind of in the oil and gas industry here in Texas, started my own company in 2009. My father had a background in doing home improvement stuff, and so I was able to learn a lot really fast, even before starting the company, on how to kind of market and sell to homeowners. And so that business isn't a terribly sexy business, but it's a backyard makeover company all across Texas. So I started in Houston, actually recruited a ton of Cedarville graduates to come help me grow it. At one point, I think we had like 9 alumni there.
Oh my gosh.
Probably still like 7, 6 or 7. So grew that company and then really about 2014, 2015 kind of got the bug and wanted to do something else in tech. That's kind of just where I wanted to be in general. And so
Yes.
had the opportunity to kind of co-found a company making an energy savings product for air conditioning. And then very very common journey of learning that product market fit wasn't there for that product, but that one part of the technology people wanted. And so we pivoted real hard. I bought out my co-founder because I was ready for the rest of the journey, and then built out a pivot into what we have today at smartac.com. So it's really not about for a lot of entrepreneurs' stories, I think it's not about necessarily the first idea,
Right.
but it's the stick-to-itiveness to be willing to pivot, listen to your customers, which is what I wish we had done before we made the first product, and then give them what they asked for. So
That's interesting. That is interesting. So, whether it's the post-it note story that I've heard, and you might have heard that, they're trying to find some adhesive, I don't know, for NASA or something, and then they can't find it, and then it becomes post-it notes or something like that. So that is a common thing, though, that you're saying. Like, you almost have to go down the journey because you can't see the journey from your couch. And unfortunately, a lot of entrepreneurs sit on their couch. But you're saying you got in the process. As you're down the road, you say, oh my gosh, we got to take a right turn. How comfortable are you able to share that? Like, were there people who said, we don't need to make that turn? Were there people who said, oh, we should have learned it earlier. Like, give us some things. Yeah.
Yeah, so I think it's actually wise not to go too far down the journey before you start getting that feedback, right? I mean, that's what the word MVP is all about, right? You got to have a minimum viable product to test and to get feedback before you spend a lot of time and energy and money. And so we didn't do that. So we had an idea, we thought it was great, we asked some friends and family, and they thought it was great. And so we went out and built it and spent literally millions of dollars building it. And, and the only thing worse than doing that with a software concept is doing it with a hardware concept, because then you're talking about years, right? And so it wasn't until we had the product to market that we realized that it was really kind of hard to get across to homeowners. Like, it took a lot to understand. And then when we wanted to go through channel partners, we found out that HVAC companies really didn't want to necessarily extend the life of the equipment, and energy companies really didn't necessarily want to save a bunch of energy.
Go figure, right? Yeah, wow.
So then we got the feedback of one feature we had built in, which was the sensors into the product, which is just an add-on feature, and people fell in love with that add-on feature. And so then we really just said, okay, well, let's sell off all of our inventory and let's focus on, if we were going to make a product just for that value proposition alone, what would that look like? And so we literally just hard stopped, sold off everything we had, went into zero revenue mode for 3 years.
Oh my gosh.
And built out that platform. But first we went and talked to the companies that we thought would buy it from us, ran all the math, asked all the questions about the ROI and the value propositions. And we're positive that it would be a home run if we went and did it before.
Wow.
We went and did it, right? And so that was a really big part of our story, and something I wish I wouldn't have. Well, I guess if we wouldn't have failed at the first product, we wouldn't have had the opportunity for this one. But
yeah,
that's the way you should go about it generally, is learn first and then invest.
What is one of your websites or the website you're talking about?
SmartAC.com is the...
SmartAC.com. Interesting.
So even then, we made a product kind of DIY capable, hoping we'd have an opportunity to maybe sell direct to homeowners. And it became evident that the real value proposition, actually, if you go to the top there and click on the top bar, the real proposition was selling to contractors so that they could do a better job of acquiring and retaining relationships with homeowners. And so as you'll see with a lot of entrepreneurs, once they start to get busy enough with success to where they don't have time to go back and look at the website, there's always even the focus of our site. We started a little bit more B2C, as you could saw on that last page.
Yeah.
And as you see now, it's more contractor focused. So it's really B2B2C is where we're at now.
This is so interesting. So basically you had this idea, which was a small piece of the large idea. And the large idea was what? Are you able to say what the large idea was?
Before the first product, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was a product that missed water around the outside air conditioning system to boost the overall capacity. So it would use less power while it was running, and it would have to run less time to keep you cool in your home. And so it also helped make the system last longer. It was clear that selling to homeowners was very tricky because there was a lot of questions in B2C e-com. And then selling it to contractors and energy companies, just they didn't care or want it. And so, but they did want the data. And so we were able to learn during that experience and find out what since then, we've raised $34 million towards this concept and have really kind of hit product market fit in a big way in the last 6 months.
I love the motto, change is in the air. That is hot. That is so hot. So you almost have a subscription than series.
It's all subscription. So it's hardware and software as a service. There's a homeowner app. There's a professional app for the technicians in the field, and there's a dashboard. So effectively, this allows contractors that usually sell maintenance agreements, where they come to your house for HVAC and plumbing and a couple of times a year to keep things up to par. This allows them to have 365-day visibility on the health of those homes. The homeowner has a relationship through the app as well. So
this is interesting. So basically, correct me if I'm wrong, but the service provider is essentially saying peace of mind.
Yeah.
Got you covered.
Yeah.
That's what they're selling. But then your product is the tool that allows them to not have to run out all the time and be in the house.
As much.
But to basically say, we're going to install this really slick software and And then they can, on their dashboard, almost like ADT home alarm security, they can monitor it. Is this right?
Yeah, it's very similar to that. Yep. So they put sensors in the house. There's a couple sensors on the vents and the ductwork, things of that nature. And then they have basically the heartbeat of the system. So yeah, those are the sensors. So, and then the homeowner, every single thing the homeowner needs is now through an app. So if they need to schedule service, it's right through the app. Talk to the technician, air filter changeouts based on the pressure changes in the ductwork, you know, all the different water leak detection, all the features that they need. Now, homeowners don't care about air conditioning until the day it breaks, but this does allow them to have more peace of mind that they're not going to have an outage of comfort on a Saturday when they have a party going on.
Wow. Oh, my gosh. Dude, this is amazing. Interesting. Okay, so I love this story, how you thought it was X, but it turned into be Y. All right, man. Well, that really gives us some good data and feedback and almost a case study. So now let's talk about Cedarville, because have you ever heard of EOS, Entrepreneur Operating System, Gino Wickman Traction?
I don't think so.
You haven't? Okay. So there's a guy named Gino Wickman who created an Entrepreneur Operating System. It's essentially how you run your business, not with software, but philosophy, goals. 100,000 companies now run on it. But here's the point. He did a book. It's called Entrepreneurial Leap. His question is, should entrepreneurs go to college? Uh-huh. And he didn't. So in the book, he basically says, look, he interviewed entrepreneurs. Most say that their degree was not worth it, but they say the college experience and the relationships and the all the other intangibles were very helpful.
Yeah.
Talk to us about what you think. Like, was your degree helpful, or did Cedarville expedite or fast track you on some success path? What do you think?
Well, I think the relationships at Cedarville I got were invaluable. So that was worth the price of admission alone. I think you could have picked a number of degrees, and I probably would have still had a similar experience in that regard. A lot of what you learn in college is proving out your capabilities so that when you go get your first job, like the engineering degree, you might not really use any of the exact things, although the principles matter, but you're just proving you can solve problems, right? And wow. You have that aptitude. Okay. So yeah, I mean, I think in general, there's a certain level of development that's required, and there's a big difference between 18 and 22. Right.
Yeah.
So I think there are certain situations where I think it would make sense to forego it. But I think in most, if you have the opportunity to go spend 4 years deciding what you want to do, who you want to be, like, you know, and then having the camaraderie of other people that are like-minded, I think is very important.
I love what you said too about hiring at a point 9 people. I mean, even the fact that we're talking today, I think it was a guy named, was it Jeff Bestie?
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's like, you got to talk to Josh. Josh is fantastic. So you got some big fans. What do you think it takes for a university to really crush it? And what I mean by that is, in the entrepreneurial space, like if you had a perfect system that you could design, what would the, and one, I'm taking notes from you. Two, you know, I feel like our listeners here are curious, but what would you infuse into the process, whether it's class or out of class?
So I think two things come to mind immediately. I hadn't really prepped for this question, of course, but I would say the first thing would be in class or out of class, but just going through the exact motions. And I know you're a fan of that as well, that you'll have to do when you go to start a company, or the initial stages of research and what's important, what's not. Because honestly, if you have an entrepreneurial bug, probably the most important thing is what you don't do, because you can't do everything. And there's going to be a million ideas all the time. Like, I try to sit them on a back burner and let them marinate for literally 6 months, a year. And if they're still speaking to me, then maybe I think about doing something about it, right?
That's but good.
I think that the decision-making process of what to do and what makes what are the important parts of that decision. And then secondly, I would say just hearing from other entrepreneurs that have been there, done that in the specific type field. So if you have a segment of the entrepreneurship program that wants to be in software, right? Then I think it would be really impactful to have 8 or 10 software founders or 8 or 10 people that have worked very high up at software companies right around the country. And the same goes for other types of industries. You could probably bucket them into 4, 5, 6 different types of businesses, whether it's software or services or, and, you know, maybe with internet companies, maybe even less. There may be 2 or 3. But I think hearing from those people and then learning what are the pitfalls that they had that they wish someone would have told them about before. And generally, these people are very willing to share those success and failure stories. And I think taking you're not going to absorb everything, but if you can latch on to 8 or 10 people and then, you know, follow them and maybe be mentored by them some one day, right? So I think those are really important things. I actually didn't have that in tech until I was able to hire someone that had kind of been there, done that a little bit more, and learned a lot from him. But yeah, those off the top of my head, those would be a couple of things that I think would be very important with the program. And then just teaching the way of thinking is something that maybe you can do, maybe you can't. But I think more fostering someone that already has the bug is probably the better.
Oh, that's good. That's good. So I want to show you something coming up here. And since we're live, I will share this. If people are watching a replay, they might miss it. But on October 27th, 2023, there's this thing called Startup Weekend. Lots of cities are doing this hackathon. It's a hackathon type thing. But if you look here, literally, Josh, Friday night, you get together. You have ideas. You pitch your idea. You vote. And you start working at 10 at night. Dude, I'm sleeping. Anyway, then day two, you have a whole agenda. And the whole day is you and teams. By the way, these are adults and students, college students.
Yeah.
And then by Sunday, you know, you're basically pitching your final thing. Like, what do you think about
that? Yeah, I love that.
You like that? So that's kind of what you're talking about is like, look, let's get out of the classroom. Stop talking theory.
So I think you cannot expect that you're going to come up with some, well, it could happen, but you're not trying to do that to come up with the idea that you're going to start a company around. You're trying to do that to understand the way you need to think through the decision-making process and then the research process and then the pitching and getting feedback process of doing that, right? Mm. So I actually think it's probably unwise for anyone to think that they're the odds that in that moment they come up with the thing that's the best thing of hundreds of things they could do. Isn't probably the case, although you could find lightning in a bottle, but it's just understanding the process, right? And how to go about it. And I think that you might run that similar process on 10 or 15 or 20 ideas. I mean, you hear very successful entrepreneurs will exit a business and then take 2 years to decide what they're going to do next, right?
Yes. So,
and that is a process of saying, look, I could probably, not I, but they could probably be successful at anything, right?
Yeah.
At some level, but it's not, but it's good to great, right? I mean,
you need
to find out what's the right thing, not just something that would be okay.
And that's the really
difference
good.
Between a $50 million exit and a $5 billion exit, probably with those.
Yeah. People. Oh, that's so good. So as we kind of, you know, land the plane here in a little bit, I'm so glad you watched the pitch. You were one of the most active people in the comments. By the way, within 48 hours, we had over 5,000 views of that thing, which was awesome. That was my whole point. Like, I'm glad we had the event. I'm glad there were 600 students there. But I told the students, like, the reason why we're doing this is to get you exposure to the world and to get the world looking at Cedarville and all kinds of stuff. But I thought you were typing out some great comments. People are coming up with ideas about, remember the clay pigeons in the dark and then the vase self-watering, that pillow for breast cancer survivors. I mean, those are some pretty crazy ideas. What did you think?
You left out my favorite was the running. Ah. Ultra marathon.
Yeah. He's in my class, Aaron. I'll tell him you like that one. Okay. So I'm going to bring up his Instagram.
I already had a call with him to see if he would, when he's ready to invest, hit me up. When he's ready to take
investments. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. He's sharp, and the IP is great. And my wife's ran an experiential marketing company running, putting on marathons for some of the biggest brands, Nike, Facebook. And so we have a lot of experience and exposure to those type things. And she loved it too.
Talk to me. Oh, I love the ultra running. So I'm so glad you followed up with him. Wow. That is, I bet you made his day. I'm going to bring up his, why did you think this one had success?
I think he had clearly had done the most research, was the most prepared, had was the farthest along. It felt to me like, and also it was the least niche, I felt like, as well. And so I think if I'm looking at something that I would be interested in backing an entrepreneur for, it's you're looking for the it factor, which I'm not saying he's the only one that has it of the group, but it stood out to me the most. And then somebody who's got a product, you know, that is going to have the highest appeal, like mass appeal.
And then
he had clearly had a plan for this is the beginning of products, and here's the portfolio of an entire brand. And so I think that was, and then just knew all of his numbers exactly. And it was extremely high margin, which is really important. And so just a lot of boxes checked.
Man, I love that. Aaron, I'm going to literally, he's in my digital marketing class. So he's going to be so encouraged that you thought that. So I love it. What would you say as we close, like, you got 2 minutes, what would you say to Cedarville? I mean, here you are, you're pro Cedarville, you're super kind. You mentioned they gave you a great experience. They are investing some dollars. Somebody gave a grant, I don't know, to hire me. It's an endowed position, but more than the position, they're letting me do things. So I'm starting something tomorrow called Q School, CUE, Cedarville University Entrepreneurship School. We have over 100 people signed up, faculty, students. What would you tell Cedarville, just like the why of, like, yes, keep supporting entrepreneurship? What would you say?
Well, it's the most fun program you can offer. most of the people that go the farthest in success, there's different ways to measure success. But if you're just talking about the way people keep score in business, then those are the people that branch out and do something themselves, right? And I think understanding, even if you don't do it yourself, doing it in a larger entity, there are startups within of the very large companies, right? So the same principles apply across all of it. So I think it would be very valuable for people that aren't in an entrepreneurship program to have this as part of their overall training. They're going to go and work in a Fortune 500 company. There's a lot of principles that you can take from that. So I think it's something that Cedarville is doing more of, and I definitely want to support however I can.
This was great. I'm going to share this with Aaron. I'm going to share this with Jeff, Bestie. It's been a blast. You come highly recommended. Even Jim Stevenson, who runs the International Center for Creativity, ICC, which is a Cedarville branch. He tuned in, and you're just helping a lot of people, Josh. So thanks for being here today.
Of course. Thanks for having me on. Go Cedarville. All right.
Take care, everybody. We'll see you.